we'll talk a little bit about Rav David Leibovitz and maybe Rav Henoch at the same time. We're Rav David and then Rav Henoch, who are both right here. Did anyone see Rav David? I mean, here's Rav Henoch. It's a few rows back. Okay. So Rav David was born in 1889, and he was just a year younger than Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. His grandfather was Rav Aaron HaKohen, who was the Chavetz Chaim's older half-brother. So his great-uncle was the Chavetz Chaim, and he was very mushpa. You can imagine, if you're a family member of the Chavetz Chaim, that's, by the way, not the only family member of the Chavetz Chaim that's here. Chavetz Chaim's Rebbetzin, and one of the Chavetz Chaim's sons is buried right here. So you look around, you'll see there's not that much that we know. I mean, the Rebbetzin, you could talk forever, but there's not that much that we know about the son of the Chavetz Chaim. He was a Rav also. I don't think he ever got married. I don't think he ever got married or had any children. But the Chavetz Chaim's a family is mamish right here. So Rav David is also a family member, and he also learned under Rav Naftali Trapp in Radin. Rav Naftali Trapp was Rosh Yeshiva in Radin, and then he went to Slobodka and he became a Talmud, of course, of the Altar of Slobodka, like so many of the other Torah giants in America. The world of Slobodka is a world of Gadlus HaAdam. It was a different emphasis than, of course, Navardik, which was about Katnus HaAdam. Navardik was about humiliating yourself, going into the bakery and asking if they sell a screwdriver just so that the baker can make fun of you that you're an idiot. That's how Musser went in Navardik. And in Navardik they had one suit for the whole yeshiva, so that if you ever went on a date, you were either wearing a suit that was too big on you or too small on you. Like, it was all about Katnus HaAdam. In Slobodka, the emphasis was on Gadlus HaAdam. And that was something, there are those that believe that the true Mesorah of Slobodka really went through Yeshiva's Chavetz Chaim, with the emphasis on Musser and Chavetz Chaim, that's true Slobodkian Musser. I'm sure others take issue with that. Everyone probably claims, the exclusive rights to the legacy of the altar of Slobodka. But that's part of the beauty of who the altar was, that the altar knew each Talmud and the kochos of each Talmud, and his impact on each Talmud was so different because the way he treated each Talmud was so different. In 1926, Rav David came to America, and it's possible, there's some debate as to the first Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Torah Vadas is here. The question is it Rav David or is it the Nezer HaKadosh, who's also here? You could see the Nezer HaKadosh somewhere, he's a tall one somewhere, we'll get to it. But we'll get to that in a moment. But because Nezer HaKadosh is Rosen is the last name. Nezer HaKadosh is someone that a lot of people don't know much about. We'll talk about him soon. But first about Rav David. So he might have been the first Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. He was a very hands-on Rosh Yeshiva. His house was open to everybody, and Talmidim would always talk about his incredible Avas HaTorah. But he had some sort of disagreement with Rav Shraga Feivel about the general direction of the yeshiva. So he ended up starting his own yeshiva, and that became Yeshivas Chavetz Chaim, that of course is headquartered now in Kew Gardens Hills. For many years was in Forest Hills, and has branches everywhere. Yeshivas Chavetz Chaim's tentacles reach the Dalet Kanfos Haaretz. He also, in our community, had a tremendous impact in our community, because Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky was a Talmud of Rav David Leibovitz. No relation, by the way, to me. Rabbi Yamin Kamenetsky was a Talmud of Rav David Leibovitz. Rafal Pelkowitz was a Talmud of Rav David Leibovitz. So these were the builders of the Five Towns community that were also mushpa so very much from him. So he really he named his yeshiva after the Chavetz Chaim, but he really modeled it after the Altar of Slobodka. You'll notice when you speak to Chavetz Chaim Talmidim, there's a certain refinement of character that comes through, that started at the top, that really trickled down to later generations. People sometimes make fun of the Derech HaLimud or this or that. You can't argue in the refinement. You can't argue on the Midos and the Musser of the Talmidim of Chavetz Chaim. He died on a Friday, much like the Chavetz Chaim died on a Friday, but wasn't buried until a Sunday, because they wanted to make sure for Kavod HaMeis that they got the proper crowd. And it was December 7th, 1941, that Rav David Leibovitz was buried here. And that, of course, is the day of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And people say in the Torah world, the day of Rav David Leibovitz's passing is a day that will live in infamy, because in the world of Torah. When Rav Palm was 18 years old, he wrote a hesped for his Rebbe, Rav David. He felt very close to him, even though he was so young. And then Rav Henoch, his son, took over. Now, Rav David died at a very young age. Rav Henoch was 23, 24 years old, and he became the Rosh Yeshiva at 23, 24 years old. You can imagine people thought, what people must have said, what's this kid taking over a yeshiva? What's he going to be able to accomplish? Needless to say, he was more than up to the task. He married the daughter of Rav Avram Trapp, who himself was a son of Rav Naftali Trapp, so it all stayed sort of within that that circle. He married Rav Henoch married a granddaughter of Rav Naftali Trapp, who of course was Rosh Yeshiva in Radin. And he always wanted Chafetz Chaim to become a movement. And he's the one, Rav Henoch was the one, that really turned Chafetz Chaim from a yeshiva into a movement, that it was going to be everywhere. I've been in meetings of other yeshivas that were trying to figure out, how do you build a brand like Chafetz Chaim built a brand? You know, that they have, wherever they go, that you go in Florida, there's a Chafetz Chaim, and this place is a Chafetz Chaim, in all sorts of different places, with a headquarter, of course, in Kew Garden Hills, with the beautiful building that they have not far from Lander College. He was an out-of-the-box thinker. He certainly didn't conform to whatever the conventional Das Torah was of the other leaders of Aguda or whatever. He had his own way of thinking about things, his own way of looking at things. In a certain sense, he was a little more modern in dress and attitude towards secular studies, but was very, very passionate and strong about the responsibility, the achrayus every yid has toward Kiruv Rechokim, toward Chinuch, toward Klal Yisrael, not to live only within our own Dalet Amos, but to be conscious of Klal Yisrael. That was a core element of his Hashkafa. The story goes that in the wake of the success of the Beatles in the 1960s, the Beatles were on a U.S. tour, and Rav Henoch went over to a student of his named Barry Chait, who seemed to be musically talented, and he said, you know, you're a musically talented kid, you should really start composing and producing some Jewish music to compete with the Beatles. I don't know if the rabbi's sons compete with the Beatles, but that's where the rabbi's sons and much of modern Jewish music was born. It was Rav Henoch telling Bari Chait, telling Rav Baruch Chait that he should start. And all the rabbi's sons, you know, classics, Lo Amos, Gesher Tzar Ma'od, Rabbos Machshavos, Hallelujah, many more of those classics. You know, we all know that next time you hear such a niggun, remember Rav Henoch. Remember that it was Rav Henoch that brought about such nigunim in Klal Yisrael. So we'll now say Kapitol. What? Tzadi Aleph. Did we say Tzadi Aleph? No, Rav Tzadi Aleph, no. Okay, Tzadi Aleph.